Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the No Quitters Podcast. I'm Dan Ray.
And Vinny Salcido.
And today, guys, we have one of my good friends who I met at the gym as well. He's the captain of the Garden Grove Police Department, Luis Bayan. He's here with us today.
Hi there.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, one of the reasons that I brought you here to the show, you're very family oriented, kind of like my partner, right? And he had aspirations to becoming a police officer or something in the FBI as well.
Graduated, I was going through the background Secret Service.
Yeah. So I was like, man, it'll be interesting to interview Luis because here we have someone that inspired to be something, but he became a realtor and a coach, right? He's been doing that for over 20 years.
Wow. Yeah, 25, 30 years.
25 years. And then you have yourself, you pretty much walked a straight line in a place in Santa Ana back when it was really active, right? And then you have me. I pretty much took all the wrong turns, right? But in one way or another, we ended up in the same place, still trying to guide our communities to making the best decisions possible.
Of course.
Yep.
So tell us, how was the making of Luis, who you are right now, growing up in Santa Ana?
Well, I'll tell you, the making, obviously, for me, it was my dad.
Okay.
My dad was always there. I'm the number six of six.
God.
I'm the baby of the family there. Okay. So four sisters who were great sisters. So I learned a lot from a lot of them. But my dad was the enforcer in our family. Not that he was mean or anything like that, but he was always involved. My dad was, when I was born, he was 49 years older than I was. So he was one of the older dads.
Oh, wow.
Right? So he's an older guy. So very traditional. My mom and dad immigrated from Mexico out here, and
both Latinos.
All Latinos, yeah, both of them from Chihuahua.
Okay.
They were always the ones that are trying to. My dad was always the one that was on me, and, there was a time when he had to be physical, and a time when he had to just kind of
love you.
Yeah.
So he molded you into.
He molded us. Yes.
Got you. I mean, what year was it when you were growing up in Santa Ana? Because it was active back then.
Late 80s, I guess. 80s. Yeah. I was high school. It was in the 90s. So between 80s and 90s, yeah.
So it was a lot of gang violence. It was pretty much almost at its peak, huh?
Absolutely. Yes.
Got you. And having that strong figure of your father pretty much kept you in line. Is that what happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My dad always was a tough guy, not tough, but loving, but tough love.
How important it is to have a father figure growing up, right? I think that's one of the things that we lost nowadays. People have this idea that you can't really discipline your children because you're going to get accused of X, Y, or Z. What's your take on that?
You know, some kids, you can talk to them and they'll listen, right? Some kids, you need to put a little bit of discipline in them, sometimes a little spanking. Spanking, it's got to be defined between a spank, correct. The purpose of spanking is to correct the behavior. And then if you cross that line, it becomes abusive.
Got
right?
it.
So belts, you're using, huaraches.
It's
not even that bad, right? But if you're using like a tree, a rama or something like that.
Horse whip.
Yeah, something like that.
El cable de las
something that's going to leave a mark or bleed or something like that is probably not the best thing to do as well. So.
Got you. What would you say your father did that mostly helped you keep yourself in line, like a discipline and tactic?
I probably would say he just showed up to everything that I had, right? So the things he could, right? My dad was a hard worker, labor, and construction. But I know that like on the weekends, playing Little League, I was probably the worst player ever. I was probably on the bench half the time, but my dad was always there. I could look over at right field or something, and he was there. I mean, we were in a league where it's all American kids. They don't speak English or they don't speak Spanish. And my dad was the only one out there, but he was there.
So, wow.
A support.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Wow.
That's a touch. Yeah. That's a heart touching moment right
it
there.
It is.
So, because I think that's one of the things that we've lost nowadays, right? This is one of the reasons why we came up with the No Quitters Podcast, because we feel like the absence of fathers out there is really driving people to just quit, right? They don't even try sometimes. They just quit in their own heads without even trying, right?
Absolutely.
And the figure of a father, right? You guys both grew up with a father. My dad was a little different, partied a lot, did a lot of stuff, and I kind of followed those footsteps. But it's for me, it's really good to interview people like this because I feel like our public is what they need, right? Yeah. We got to go back to those, we're rebuilding the family dynamics, right?
Yes.
So, man, that's amazing to hear that just by showing up,
yeah,
right? Because not, I mean, come on, you guys, we're all fathers, but it, being a father doesn't come with instructions.
No, it's a process. I'm still learning. My oldest is 18, and I'll tell you, I think I'm more in fear now than I was when he was little. You know, it's just because there's so much out there. You know, seeing what I see because of what I do.
Right.
And then the thing is, look, we worked on him, my wife and I, as very young age with them, and we're doing our best to get him ready, right? And you just got to trust the process. You know, you got to let him fly out. He's going to make mistakes no matter what, but yeah, you just got to be there for him.
Absolutely. I have that fear sometimes too. And I'm like, hey, you know what? What's going to happen is going to happen. And they're going to be fine. I just need to trust that they're going to make the right decisions. They're not going to do anything stupid.
Yeah. Right.
Well, what's funny is growing up in Santa Ana, man, I would, you know, ride my bike far, the riverbed, go different places late at night, not late at night, but like just after, you know,
yeah,
street lights came on, I was still out there. And just to, now I can't even let my little son go to Hughes on his own to, you know, right, to school. You know, I'm dropping him off. So,
you know what? That is very interesting because I remember the same thing and I'm sure you do, yeah, right? Yeah. But do you remember like a moment when all that shifted? Like from one to the next?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't see it.
Well, we became parents.
Yeah. Again,
I think because right, we used to ride our bikes to practice, yeah, you know, and it was like a mile.
Yeah,
and then, or you'd get a ride with the coach, and now it's like, oh, you got to be careful because of all the stuff that we hear. But I think when we became parents is when that changed. I mean, when our parents were parents and we were kids, they were working.
Yeah, it's true.
They didn't really have time to do that stuff.
That's right. Why
we became resourceful, you know, because we had to handle ours. I was a latchkey kid coming home with my little sister. And, you know, when my brother and sister got home, we had to clean the house, do all that stuff. So we became resourceful. But at what age or what time do you think that transition for you?
To being resourceful?
Well, no. At what time do you think that now you became that defensive dad protecting your kid?
The moment they're born. Because you grow, I remember riding my bike across Santa Ana from one place to a park, Centennial Park. It was active back then.
Oh, yeah.
But then at one point that whole dynamic shifted, right? We used to be able to be free, but now we're parents and we saw our kids kind of shelter them. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. My kids are sheltered. My kids are totally sheltered. Yes.
Right. I mean,
I laugh because I'm like, I remember being like 8 years old and my mom would give me a note and $1.07, go get me a pack of cigarettes at the corner, you know? And here you are. And the lady's like, okay, take them straight to your mom. Okay. Sounds good. Like, and they would send us off.
Yeah.
Right.
Crazy how things change.
Yeah.
Well, I think you guys are onto something because it was a shift in our mindsets, right? That since we've seen a lot of stuff, right? We kind of just guarded our kids and now they're like extremely sensitive to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So it's amazing to touch on that subject, right? And how important it is to have a father figure just showing up, right?
Yeah.
Besides that, is there anything else that he did that kind of you remember?
Well, yeah, when I was wrong, he dropped the hammer. He had no, you know, hey, agarrame el cinto, go out there. And I would such a...
You would go get it yourself.
Yeah, that was the most...
Had it to him.
That hurt more than the whipping, you know, because you're out there thinking about it. Oh, my God.
You're tearing up as you're going to go grab that big ass
belt. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it was a special work construction belt that he had hanging back of the door of the bathroom.
That was a tool.
And then you have to bring it to him. And it's all right. Got up there. And then don't do it again.
The slowest walk ever, huh?
Oh, it was tough. But yeah, you know those things now, it's just kind of, it taught me to kind of be tough a little bit too. And it also showed, it changed my behavior. You know, I knew the consequences of things. So it made me, I felt, I was that kid that needed that whooping, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't just talk to me and say, hey, don't do that. No, I'm going to do it. I don't take no for an answer.
Right.
So that cinto, it was the one that kind of changed a little thing for me.
Got it.
In the right direction.
Especially growing up in that era, right? Where there was a lot of gang violence and stuff like that, right? What was your mindset like back then? Because, I mean, a lot of people were joining gangs and doing all the bad stuff because everyone around them was doing them.
Yeah. 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 So for me, that never really interested me to becoming in a gang. You know, I saw it. I mean, we lived in a neighborhood where literally there was a drive-by shooting weekly, you know, especially we lived in a corner house. There was apartments nearby and it was just a haven for rival gang members to come and shoot these guys up. But, you know, luckily for me, you know, I get along with a lot of people. I had since a young age, I've always been kind of the social guy.
Gotcha. People that, skills.
Yeah. These gangsters, gang members, a lot of these guys, I was cool with them. You know, I never did the stuff that they did or anything like that, but they knew that even at a young age, they knew I always wanted to be a cop, you know.
Oh, wow.
Hey, La Chota, but they were friends about it. And, you know, one of the things too is some of these guys were actually very protective. Growing up in junior high or elementary and junior high and high school, I was a little short guy, still am, but thin guy. But they would like be there for me kind of to protect me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And never did they say, hey, come join our gang or anything like that. They knew not to ask that.
Right.
But they also knew my father. And my father was really tough. And they respected my father.
Oh, you know? Gosh.
So, yeah. I'll tell you a little story on that. So my friends from high school, I was on the wrestling team. And they didn't live in the neighborhood, but my friends, they lived in Tustin. I go, hey, why don't you guys come over? We'll have some food and stuff at the house. No problem. We walk from San Ana High to my house, which is a couple miles down. And I'm walking and talk about street smarts. I'm walking by and I see these kind of two cholos out there. They had a hose that was cut. A hose that was cut. I'm like, that's a little weird.
Manguera?
A manguera. They had it. Okay. And I'm like, okay, weapon right away or something. And they were like kind of bending it. And I'm like, oh shoot, they're gonna try to rob us. And luckily we're only about a block and a half away from the house. And I go, hey, I was telling my buddies, I go, when it's time, I'll tell you, run. You run. He goes, what? I go, just listen to me. And they were starting to come up to us. I go, run. We ran fast, jumped the fence to our backyard, and then went to the back door to our house. And my friend's like, what the hell was that? And then you hear my dad's like, what's going on? I go, all these cholos try to rob us. My dad, you know, never has shot a gun, nothing. But he had a little 32 or 22 gun or a little thing, and he had it behind his back. And the gangsters come to the door, and they knocked on our door. And they're like, oh, Don Luis, my dad's name was Don Luis. He goes, hey, Don Luis, dispensa, yo no sabía que era su hijo. Pensamos que era otras personas. My dad's like, okay, gracias. And then that's it.
But they came and apologized.
They apologized.
That's how much respect they had for your father.
Yeah.
In the community.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And my dad, like I said, my dad, simple man, worked hard, didn't have any issues with anyone. There would be, you know, we lived close to a rail yard.
Wow.
And, you know, these people come from Mexico. Without anything to eat, my dad would open up the house and cook them meals, my mom and dad, and give them some clothes and stuff and send them on their way.
Oh, so he would help the community.
Oh, yeah. And not just my dad. There was other people in the neighborhood that did the same thing, too. It wasn't just my dad. There was our little community that back then was really tight-knit, and they would help out people.
Got it. So he was known in the community.
He was.
And respected.
Yeah.
Got it. You did mention he was a boxer, too, no?
He was a boxer, yeah. So he was born in Chihuahua, but raised in Mexico City. And he was raised in La Lagunilla.
Uh-huh.
It's a colonia over there in Mexico, but he was a boxer. He loved boxing, you know, always in shape. But always tell me, you know, I think that's why I got into it because of my dad, because he also lifted weights. I
mean, got it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That's how I met him. Actually, I was like working out by myself. I'm like, man, I got to go and work out with the biggest guy I saw. I'm like, it's him. The biggest, I haven't seen him a lot of shirt. Me, the guy is big, you know. I went up to him. He's like, hey, you want to run some workouts? He's like, yeah. That's how we started working out.
Well, actually, I saw Danny. He's big. I'm like, hey, yeah, whatever you want, man. Whatever. So
I'm
like,
almost done.
Yeah. I'm like, you want to work? I go, can you just train me? No. So Dan's a stud. Yeah. Dan's a stud.
That's amazing to hear, man. So at what point did you start getting that curiosity to becoming a police officer?
Man, I'll tell you, it's gonna be funny, but watching Chips, right?
Oh yeah.
My dad got me a radio, a walkie-talkie, and my buddy too, and we taped them on, and we were talking to each other. Of course, I had to be Punch the whole time,
of course.
Punch. Or the cops and robbers. I always had to be the cop, but that's always got into it, you know. For me, you know, Adam 12, some episodes of Adam 12 back in the day, they were out there, we're watching them, and it's just always interesting. It was interesting for me to see that, you know, for me seeing, you know, in a neighborhood where there's, you know, things going on, and they come in and they kind of save the day kind of thing, right?
Right.
So to me, that was interesting. I always wanted to help people. Yeah.
Got it. So how old were you?
I got to say, I was probably like, to be honest, like 5 or 6 years old.
Got it.
Always been interested in her. So.
And you just never left that.
Never left that. It's never
really born with that thing.
He knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
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 And at 14, you mentioned that at 14, you started in as a cadet or explorer, or what was that?
So before that, I was a Devil Pups. So it's kind of like junior Marines kind of thing. It's a program. It's a great program that's run by the Marine Corps.
They still have it?
They still have it. It's
really,
you know, it's a great program for young men. And basically what it is, they bring kids from all over the country and they take you to Camp Pendleton and they do kind of a little mini boot camp for 10 days. Yeah, it's 10 days.
And how old do you have to be to join that?
The youngest is 13 and I got in at 13 and I think it goes up to 17 because.
Does it run like on the summer or something? Just in
it's
case.
It's a summer program. Actually, it's going to start up or it's continuing right now. It's a Devil Pups program. So yeah, I highly encourage it for everyone that wants to do that. Absolutely.
And it was like boot camp.
First of all, it was free.
No, 10 days.
10 days.
10 days. But leading up to it, you it was a training. So you had to get in shape to go.
To be able to handle that.
So by the time you were there, you're running, you know, you're not like the Marines that are really going through all the big stuff.
Yeah.
But you're running a few miles a day there. You're doing pull-ups. You're jumping off, you know, water towers into pools. You're hiking. You're camping out in certain mountains and stuff out there, and you know they teach you kind of a little bit of survival, the history of the Marine Corps. So
when you left after that training, how did you feel after having accomplished that?
So it's difficult. So the whole process was hard because this is the first time I've ever been away from home, especially that long.
Oh.
Right. And it was weird because we also had to write letters. Mm-hmm. They don't write letters anymore, of course. I don't know if they do or not, but it was expensive. Great because my parents received the letters and they were in the 10 days, they were able to send the letters
right back.
Yeah. And it was great to see like, oh my God, they're still around. You know,
something
to
look forward to.
Something to look forward to. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely. So
very cool.
Yeah. And then, I became I was eligible to become a police explorer.
Mm-hmm.
And then my brother-in-law, who was a sheriff's deputy, knew somebody in Garden Grove and kind of introduced me to the advisor for the Explorer program, the leader of the program. And from then on, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my calling. I want to be here. This is great. So ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And then now fast forward 25 years as an actual police officer. Now you're a captain.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, 25.
Hmm. And you mentioned maybe about 5 more years before you retire?
Yes. God willing, 5 years. Yes.
Now, what's the one story that you can think of that was the most gratifying moment in your career of maybe something you stopped or someone you caught?
Maybe someone's life you shaped.
Oh, yeah.
Well, right. So the gratifying one for me was when we first got our body, or not body cams, but our in-car camera system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good and bad. It's bad in the sense that I witnessed, it witnessed a homicide in progress. You know, it was a gang fight and it was on Fairview and Gargoyle Boulevard. And these guys, right by the 7-Eleven, and in the middle of it, I just look over and I see this guy kind of stabbing another guy. It's obvious to me it was gang related. So I put it out right away. And I mean, as soon as I turned my lights on, everybody starts running. I got in a foot pursuit, ended up catching the stabber. And it happened so quickly and it kind of like, wow, it kind of shaped me like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. I want to work with gangs and stuff like that in the gang unit. But we were able to get the guy, arrest him.
In the gang unit.
Well, before that got me into the gang unit. Yeah. But before that, we tried to render medical aid to the, he was a boy. He was a kid, 16 years old. To me, it was hard because I saw him pass. So to me, it was hard because since then I ended up going to talking to the neighborhood there, the parents. A lot of the parents there, they're afraid of
speaking up.
Retaliation. Two things: speaking of retaliation, but also with the police department. There, you know, there's no trust or very little trust, and it's not so much from us, but from where they came from, that, you know, the
corruption.
So they were afraid of that. So for me, I was like, well, this is a great opportunity to kind of bridge that gap and talk to them and explain to them, hey, listen, you know, your kids, you always say that your kids aren't gang members, but I go, hey, what does a gang member look like? And I have them explain to me, what does a gang member look like? And they explain it. I go, well, what is your son wearing? And they're like, oh, I go, well, who buys that for them? Well, I do. I go, well, then maybe you need to start kind of getting involved a little bit. And those kind of talks helped a little bit, you know, and it did change some of these guys, got them out of the neighborhood. In fact, one of the guys who was not a gangster at all, but grew up in that neighborhood, in one of the toughest neighborhoods there in Garden Grove, is now one of our police officers. And he's a success. He's a good kid and hardworking. He's got a jovial attitude. And also is going back and giving back to that community. He's still involved out there. He's since That's moved awesome. Out of there, but he continues to go back there and help out. So it's kind of the thing that we try to, you know, repay, you know.
Now I know that people coming from other countries, like, they don't trust the police or the corruption in their country, or even I have a Chinese neighbor and she didn't want to call the police. When someone walked into her house and they were probably going to ransack the house, she heard them and they ran off. They took off and she's like, ah, they already left. Why am I going to call the police? So we called for her. But do people still have that?
They do. Yes. That's why it's important to have, to try at least to have people from, as officers, representative of their community members, right? Yeah. Garden Grove is a very diverse city.
Yeah.
We have, you know, Vietnamese, Korean, Hispanic, you know, Mexican, Salvadorian residents in our neighborhood, you know, and it's a melting pot of all these cultures together. And it's, to me, it's very important. And we have officers that never experienced that they're learning that as well, that they've never been involved. You know, they lived in other places that don't have, they're not as multicultural diverse as we are.
Right.
So for them, it's also a learning experience for them. So as a community and a department, we're kind of growing together and learning to kind of work things out. And tonight we have a national night out at our city, which obviously it's every city, but Garden Grove's hosting theirs. And we're going to be out there as well today.
So what does that do?
So it's a coming out of everybody comes and visits your department throughout the nation. You know, every department hosts, our department's hosting one, and everybody from our community is invited to come see every program that we have involved, whether it's a K-9 unit, the SWAT team, community services, people from city, you know, services as well, school district. They all come together and we kind of share what we do to kind of show for what we're doing for the whole year.
To the public,
yeah.
Well, that's pretty
badass. We close down the street. People come over, they hang out, they take pictures, we give prizes, you know, there's things.
Just to keep the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for us, it's important that the community shows that we're with them, that we support them.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Wow.
You know, I mean, right now there's a lot of ICE thing going on, you know, and maybe that sparks a lot more fear in our community. They think that the police department is with ICE, right? Has that caused any friction?
Yeah, you know, it's. I don't say, I wouldn't call it friction. I would call it concern for the citizens. Mm-hmm. You know, the beauty of it is in our community, most of the residents know that we're here to support them, that we're not a federally government agency and we're not questioning them. They have the reasons why they do it. But we also understand the residents, you know, that they're affected by that, their concerns as well. Ours is just to protect residents, no matter where they're from, what they're, you know, where they're coming from. But when they're in our community, we're here to protect them. Everybody has a right to be protected and have some type of say in it.
So, Got it.
Wow. And so, I know you say you want to retire in about 5 years. Have you ever thought about starting another business, or are you just out?
You know, I don't know anything about a business. That's the thing. Okay. I don't know. But there's, you know, there is some interest that I would love to, you know, have. I know I kind of dabbled in maybe doing, like, during COVID, the disinfecting company. And I kind of dabbled in that a little bit with my friend, who's actually a Canadian friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And we met in Mexico on one of our vacations over 10 years ago. And we tried to work on it. And it worked pretty well during COVID. But it kind of fizzled out. So I don't have the mind or the capacity of being a businessman, I guess. You know, I got to learn my limitations as well, too. I have my limitations. So
gotcha.
That's a different level for me. Yeah.
Awesome. Now, How would you feel if one of your kids wanted to become a police officer also?
You know, it's very difficult, but at the end of the day, they're going to be their own man, and I got to respect no matter what. I've always, now I'm going to be like afraid for them, right? You know, but you know, for me, it's, I got to respect whatever they want to do. You know, I just got to be their support. I can't tell them what to do.
Yeah.
You know, right now I can because they're young, but you know, I don't want to be that dad that hovers over them for every little thing. They got to make their mistakes or find their successes on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that would be, I mean, it's not a big thing for me. It's a lot of work. I would tell them, be a fireman. Everybody loves firemen.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know what, man? Police officers are known to have one of the most, the biggest divorce ratios.
Yes.
Right. How's that been for you in your marriage? Right. And has it affected your family dynamic at all?
Divorce rates in officers is huge. Yes. Yeah. For, numerous reasons. Right. But the fact is, look, we work long hours. We work different shifts and we miss family vacations. We miss holidays, birthdays and stuff because that's our calling. We have to be there.
Gotcha.
Some, you know, if you don't have a spouse that supports you, it makes it really difficult. It's not just one person. It has to be a supporting spouse. Luckily for me, my wife is not only supportive, but she's also in the line of work that I do as well.
So makes it a little easier.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's a dispatcher. So to be honest with you, both of us, because of our calling, we've missed our kids' birthdays together, and we've learned to celebrate birthdays on another day, Mother's Day on another day, Father's Day, this. So that's why every year we take our family vacations and we kind of disconnect and we go as far as we can and try to do that. We also do camping, things like that as well but a huge, big vacation usually, you know, in the summertime for us. So
got it.
Yeah.
Nice. So if you could go back and change anything throughout your life, is there something you would change?
Yeah. You know, every moment counts. I think that, you know, getting older and stuff like that, but when you have an urge to see if you think of a relative, take the time to call them. Spend time with them because you never know. Your time here is counted. It's only so much time. So take that opportunity to call that person, be there with them. You know, I love spending time with my parents, but unfortunately by the time I was an officer, they had moved out of state. So it was really hard. And there was times where I could have made the effort to be there and I didn't. And I wish I would have done that a little more. So spend more times. Yeah.
So spend more time with your family, reach out to those people. Just because they're not around you, they're in another state or somewhere far, give them a call. It's important.
Yes.
A lot of times people also hold like an old grudge, right? And they miss that opportunity to just amend the situation and move forward, right? Because we're only here for a little bit of time.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. On your career as a police officer, you kind of mentioned one that kind of was the glue, right? An experience that helped you make that decision or confirmation, like, yeah, this is where I want to be. Have you had a situation where you're like, God damn, I don't want to be here no more? Well, I don't even know if I want to continue to do this.
No, you know what? I know it sounds weird, but no, I've always wanted when I was a rookie cop and, you know, we worked the 10-hour shifts and stuff. And I was like, all right, it's time to go home. I have to go home. Because I'm thinking, man, they're paying me to do this, to go out there and go after bad guys and stuff like that. But, you know, there's times where, it's not where I don't want to do this anymore. It's just like, man, this is the most inopportune time. There's my kids' soccer games going on. My son's wrestling things going on. I wish I can be there, you know. But we also have our priorities, you know, not priorities that our sons are not. But my job is what provides for their, you know, going to wrestling, doing this, doing that, stuff, soccer. So sometimes we got to sacrifice some things for the good of the better, right? For the city. Yeah.
Got it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you're pretty much, you have a lot of freedom now, right? To be there. When I met you, you had your kids, your boys working out with you in the gym.
Yes.
Right. So that's amazing to see. And just thinking about it, man, just since you started as a little boy, you were playing, you know, cop.
Oh, yeah.
and your life has always been that. You know what I mean? It's like, imagine like you're playing realtors or coach.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's amazing to have an experience, someone's story like that, right? Like you just never stopped, right? Yeah. You don't see yourself not doing this.
Well, like I said, I love what I do. I love what I do, and I'm going to continue until last day,
right? Got it.
But I think a lot of the experiences in my life, you know, believe it or not, customer service is always an important thing for our department. And it's very important because it's how you talk to people. That's how they're going to react, right? I can be, you know, forceful and say all this kind of stuff, but you know what? I'm not going to elicit the information I need from them or you know, the opportunity to figure out what's going on if I'm always a jerk, right? So you got to always talk. And I think customer service is an important thing. And one of the places where I learned customer service, believe it or not, was working at McDonald's. McDonald's taught me a lot because you're going to deal with frustrated customers. My fries are soggy. They're overcooked.
They're too golden.
And I'll tell you, McDonald's, at least at the time when I worked there, yeah, too golden. They were like, hey, you know, the customer's always right. Their philosophy is, hey, try to do better, because they knew that, hey, listen, yes, arguing with this person, these fries really only cost like 30 cents to make.
Right. It's not worth that argument.
Yeah. Just give them some other 30 more cents and you're still winning. You're still profiting. And then guess what? You give them those fries, they're going to come back and they're better. And sure enough, it's like, my point is like, if the people want to feel that they won the argument, let them win the argument. As long as I got what I wanted, they can call whatever they want. And for me, that's worked. Right.
Got you. You know, growing up, I had a mentor. He used to tell me to focus on the words, right? A lot of time we're focusing on mannerisms or just the energy, you know, someone was yelling something, but they were saying it was really just nothing confrontational, right?
No bite, yeah.
Right. It was really nothing confrontational. So he helped me kind of just take away the noise, the body language, the tone and all that stuff, and just really focus on the words, right? And I feel like that's something that you guys do a lot, right? Kind of like
us, we you know, the thing is, look, police officers, as you know, and I don't need to say it, but we're not perfect. You know, we come from all shades,
right,
and molds and stuff, and but at our department there's a standard, and that's where we're trying to work with that.
Got it. In your career, have you had a mentor that's kind of helped you or guide you?
Yeah, absolutely. For law enforcement, it was my brother-in-law. Well, that got me into it. You're talking about being calm and collective, and he was one of the most calm, collective persons out there.
Right.
And very smart, very focused. But you walk in there, like he's like a little teddy bear. He was cool. And for me, I kind of emulate what he does, and it's worked, you know. And to me, he's always been one of my heroes. Of course, my dad's number one, but that's the other one that I.
Is he much older than you?
My brother-in-law? Yes, he was older than I, and he's since passed. He died of cancer, but yeah, he's always been memory. Still, after years of him passing, he's still, you know, we still connect. Yeah, we have that connection.
That's badass.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Now, would you have some advice for maybe someone who's thinking of getting in law enforcement, something that you, maybe a suggestion or something for those people out there, of someone that would have thought, I don't know if I could be a cop, or they're thinking about it. What would you advise them?
They got to know that, hey, listen, it's not for the money. It's a calling, and you have to have passion for it, because it's not just about you. It's about your partners that you're going to be involved with. If you're a lazy cop or you don't know what you're doing, you're no use to not only your partners, but to the community. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we don't want. We can hire anybody, but we have to be very selective. So you have to have that energy. You know, I'm an older guy now, but I'm still going to the gym every day, and things hurt and my back creaks and here and there, but you got to,
things are cracking.
Yeah. You got to show up and work out and be that example, right, for the community. And it's not easy if you're just one of the guys that just shows up and not, you got to be a team player. And if you don't have that connection with your people, then you're going to be ineffective. So, and you're no use to us. So,
wow.
Got it. How good is the support within the department?
That's great. You know, they call it a brotherhood, but a positive brotherhood. Yeah. If, you know, when I lost my dad, you know, not only my family, but my extended family, which is the police department. They were involved. They called. They showed up to my, you know, the funeral, and they were there. They were involved with that. If someone's going through some issues, either divorce or financial issues, they're there. You know, even our department also, with the help of our chief, we filled a formed a peer support group. Which is not just of officers, but support members of the entire police department, whether it's professional staff, that they're not police officers, all the way up to police officers. They're all involved in it, and they're helping each other out in difficult times. They also provide mental health support.
Yeah, because you guys go through some heavy shit.
There's a lot of things these guys see. Yeah. A lot of different things that we see. And
obviously, you know, it's not the same. You witness something, then you got to go home to your wife and kids and stuff.
That's the thing is, you know, for us, we got to learn to switch it on, switch it off, right? We go home and so they're always saying that the cops have this deranged humor,
right?
But it's not that we're like making, it's kind of a defense mechanism for us, I guess,
right?
To kind of be able to see that, because we see, you know,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Right. How effective is that turning off and turning off kind of deal?
It's tough, you know, especially when like seeing incidents where kids that passed, like my kids, it's hard because you can't help
but
bring it home. Yeah. It's like you go home and you hug your kids, right?
Yeah.
So every night I go in there and make sure when they were little, I would go home and just check, see their breathing, you know, kind of shake them a little bit and okay, they're okay. And I go to bed. It's just my little, I guess, OCD.
I've done that too.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So.
So just gratitude, I guess, is what's helped you just stay like keep your mental health right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things with that same advisor that I told you about, he taught me about peaks and valleys. Okay. You know, there's times are going to be you're on top of the world, and then there's times when you're at the bottom. You know, and just know that you're going to go through that mountain range through peaks and valleys, up and down. So just because you're down right now doesn't mean you're going to not go up. So just keep on it, keep focused. And that's helped, you know, through my tough times. It's helped out.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you guys have a pretty supportive team.
Very supportive team. Yeah. Not perfect, but very supportive. Absolutely.
Got it.
Wow.
I mean, we don't have to face that with our families at all. You know what I mean? What's the worst that can happen? A deal didn't sign.
I mean,
stressful. I'm sure.
Being able to disconnect is a big deal because you're on a friggin' roller coaster, you know, catching the bad guy and seeing something happen to some kid and like, it's crazy to be able to handle that stuff. And we don't understand that cops are human beings. They're normal people and they have good days, bad days, and they're probably dealing with stress from other stuff. And, you know, it's a tough job. And like he said, it's not like the ones that really want it don't do it for the money.
Yeah.
It's a calling,
right? It's a calling. Yeah. We've had guys that want it for the money and they don't last. They don't last.
Your heart needs to be on it.
You see something else and they don't last.
They end up doing the wrong decisions.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I talk about turning off and on, like mentally, like the horror of seeing things, but you're not ever off duty. Do you catch what I'm saying? Like if I go to In-N-Out, I'm walking in, I'm looking, okay.
You're scoping the
threats
out.
Honestly, it's ingrained to us in the academy. And right. We're looking at the threats. You know, okay, I never have my back to the door. I'm always looking out so I can see it. The kids know this already, my family. Dad, you can sit here. They already-
You guys walk in like a unit.
they know the routine.
We're very rigid and stuff sometimes, but you're right. It is. You know, when you get out, when you go through a door, you're going through a door, you kind of like-
You.
It's stuck. Honestly, it sounds crazy. Like we're dorky, but it's just because we learned that in the academy, right? You know, bad guys have the advantage because they can lose. We can't lose.
Right.
We lose.
And then they blend in with everybody else.
They have the advantage of, hey, I'll fight another day. No, we have to fight because if we don't, we're dead, right? That's how we take it. So we got to make sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's tough.
Now, have you ever been involved in a shooting?
No.
Oh, thank God. No. Good. Wow.
But we're always prepared just in case, you know, it's, and you know, in reality, I can't give you an exact accurate stat, but I can tell you that more than 80 to almost 90% officers will never be involved in a shooting.
Okay.
So what you see in here on TV, it's not.
That's rare.
It's the other 20%, the other 15, 20% that did happen.
Yeah, it did happen. And that's, but it's, even then you have better odds at Vegas to win, you know, the jackpot.
Yeah.
Announced over there.
Got you.
So, but you always got to be prepared for that one time. That's what we say. We can't afford to lose.
I mean, and there was a lot of stuff going that was against the police. Like they were trying to defund the police and all this other stuff. People don't really understand what's going on. Has that affected you at all? Or maybe your department?
You know, hearing it. So we were there for the protests and stuff, and it's terrible because we're here to help, right?
Right.
Yes, there's some. I'll tell you, there's some bad apples in law enforcement, absolutely. And you know, we work really hard to get those guys. And a lot of those the people why you hear stuff is because we are the ones that were investigating, we initiated, and we're very transparent, and that's why you see it on TV. But you know, when a cop does something like that, it is a black eye to society because we're held to a higher standard, and so it's hard. It now they paint us with a broad brush on all of us there, and it for us it's tough. We don't like bad cops. At least the good cops that I work with, we don't want that.
What really does define? Because there's some little one millisecond of in time could define you as a bad person or a good person, how you reacted to something.
Oh, like a shooting or something like that?
So maybe, yeah.
Well, you know, the
what really defines a bad cop and a good cop, you know?
Well, you know, you have video, right? Mm-hmm. You with video and you sit back and call it Monday Night Quarterback, you have the ability to sit down frame by frame and look at everything that's done. We don't have that ability. We have a split second decision.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
And to do it, but that's why training comes into, you know.
Yeah.
You
how rigid is that? Right? How rigid is that training to kind of de-escalate? Because you're talking about a millisecond. Either you pull a gun or either you defend yourself, right? And obviously the public eye is in your ass, you know, trying to misconstrue the whole situation sometimes. Right.
Well, it starts with having good support managers, right? The managers push down to the sergeants. There are policies and procedures. We make sure, like our pursuits. Hey, we have a very strict pursuit policy. And if these officers, we have two officers that are supposed to go in pursuit at one time, right? Mm-hmm. And if we have officers that were unauthorized to be in that pursuit, unless we authorize them and they're in there or not, we fang them for it. We get down and discipline them because... that can cause an issue with the citizens out there, right? Somebody driving. Santa Ana just had a bad accident. Not police involved or anything like that. But
last night, no?
Last night. Nothing to do with law enforcement. But saying like, hey, if a driver or an officer drives and it causes an accident, I mean, you're taking somebody's life, you're causing or an injury or anything like that. That's on us.
Yeah.
So we got to do better. So our chief, our department, we strive on making sure that our police or our pursuit policies are intact. So we're always continuously trained. We go drive for EVOC, Emergency Vehicle Operations Center, and we basically learn how to drive with lights and siren. We call it Code 3.
Got it.
So pursuits.
Code 3. Code
pits. Three. You know, they do the pit maneuvers too. There's only certain times where you're able to do it safely. So, okay. Yeah.
And how effective is the department in training the staff how to deal with the psychological issues, right, of de-escalating a situation? Because a lot of the stuff gets lost in the sauce, right? Like someone is loud and then not matching that energy could be a little bit difficult.
So not only are we do we do it, but we're also mandated by the state.
Mm-hmm.
So post peace officers police officers standards and training, so we're supposed to do so many hours every year on types of training, including mental health, de-escalation. And not only that, but we also as a department do quarterly training in regards to that as well. So, you know, we have officers coming in, psychological or psychs that come in there, you know, and then we sit down and we talk to them and then they train us about de-escalation. And we learn from other incidents from other officers that weren't successful that did the bad stuff. We learn from that and go, okay, look how it looks on camera. Cause you're in person, right? But when you see yourself in camera, like, oh my God, I did that. You might not even know.
Right.
So that's why we're always, we love the body cams, mm-hmm. right? First of all, because it protects the officer, mm-hmm. because it protects them from false claims. Cause we've had a few of them and yep. where it shows them refute what they were saying. I go, okay, let me check the video. Let's look at it together. And none of what they said happened. Right. And we look at other cameras and it's total lie.
Right.
And other times we see like, okay, yeah, this officer needed to do better.
You could have gotten lost on the he or she said, right?
Yeah. 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 But it also catches a lot of things too. Like if they do something wrong, like, hey, they didn't do this or they forgot to book this or they misplaced that. It helps us. You know, and we're not always trying about like, not everything that they do is on purpose, but so we don't go out there and just kind of harp these guys. We it's more of a training thing, right? It's like a kid, they're growing up, they're going to make mistakes, you know, and you're teaching your teen how to drive.
Yeah.
He doesn't turn the signal and, or he hits the curb when he's making a right turn kind of thing.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's the kind of stuff that you just got to change that behavior.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of training that goes into it. I mean, obviously you guys are shaping our communities, right? And in between people trying to misconstrue what a police officer does and does not do, right? And between the defund the police and everything else that you guys go through, it looks like you guys keep your stuff pretty solid.
Well, as solid as we can be. I mean, we're not perfect, like I said before. It's a process, we're learning, and that's why like things like this. The chief also has a community board where chiefs forum that comes in, and they kind of, there's people picked from the community, they come in and they kind of give, you know, their two cents of how we're doing. They help out, and that's that we take that information, we kind of discuss it and see how we can make that a better thing, give customer service to our community.
Got it.
Luis, I have a question for you. So what would be something that the community could do to help the police department, or to help something that's missing, or something that could help the police department?
You know, just get involved, you know. If you see something, you know, we'll ask, dispatchers will always ask for the information, but say, hey, I want to remain anonymous.
You can.
Yeah, you can remain anonymous. Well, you know, you just kind of point us in the right direction. We'll do the rest, right? If somebody's getting robbed and you don't want to call because you're afraid of retaliation, you just call and say, hey, there was a robbery right at the In-N-Out. Send some officers. What's your name? Hey, I want to remain anonymous, but the person's wearing this, this, and this, and he's running this way. Perfect. Okay, thank you. And then guess what? We find them.
Catch them.
Yeah. But if we don't get those calls and we get it after the fact, it's harder for us to solve those crimes, right? Mm.
Got you. So in other words, what would be one thing that the police department can do to kind of make the public feel more safe to do that?
So I think we're already doing that. We have a community academy, mm-hmm. where people from the community come in and they do kind of a little police academy. They don't run or do anything like that, but they learn from every unit that we have, our policies and procedures, why we do things. We even take them to the range and they go shoot. They go shoot with the SWAT team.
AKs and everything, ARs.
Well, they'll do that. They'll go on the ride along as well to see firsthand what they do and what an officer does. And I'll tell you, you'll see officers, you know, of course it's against the law for regular people to be on the phone, but we're exempt. We're able to use that, and you'll see, well, why is he doing? Well, we're on our computer, we're typing, we're calling people, we're trying to figure out different things. So we're multitasking the whole time. We're driving, reading the screen, talking on the phone, because our police cars are our office. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all we have.
Yeah.
That's what we work, and we're out.
Like an office on wheels.
It's an office on wheels.
So I have a question regarding that, because when we go places, like, let's say a sporting event or something, we'll see a police car that, or the guys are having lunch or whatever, they leave the car on and it's on for hours. And we're thinking, taxpayers' money. But there's more to it than that. Like, some of the cars won't turn back on, I heard, because of service issues that need to be done and stuff. What is the reason that they do that?
There is thousands of dollars of electric equipment that's in there,
mm-hmm.
and it's got to continue.
The computer has to stay on at all times.
It's got
to
run.
They can't turn it on, turn it off, turn it off.
It's going to cost more if you got to buy batteries and do things like that.
You blow up the disc or something.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, that's our tax money. No. They need to understand there's a reason for that.
Yeah. Or sometimes you have canines in there, right? The dogs.
Oh, the air conditioning.
So they run the air conditioners.
You're right.
So they have that going on. And they have sensors. The officers have sensors. So if the engine dies, the door automatically kicks open, or it alerts the canine officer, depending on how they, you know, configure it.
Yeah.
But so nothing happens to the dog.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's reasons why. That's not like,
They don't just do it to waste money.
No.
Yeah, of course. Wow.
As a captain of the Garden Grove Police Department, is there something that you would want to say to our public?
Hey, you see an officer, just wave at them, right? We're doing this job because we want to do it. We love people. Sure, we have issues, and you know, sometimes we're having our bad days, and we gotta learn as well as, hey, you know, block the two, but we want the community support. We love it when they get involved. And if there's anything that we can do to help, feel free. You know, we're always there for you.
So let's bridge that gap and let's help them help us, because ultimately they do it for us.
Got it. Well, I'm sure the departments vary, like between city and city, that everybody kind of runs the department.
Oh yeah.
Same, or is it?
They have their own standards of their policing. You know, I'm only familiar with mine because that's where I've worked, but there's, you know, you go to other cities, they ride two-man cars. We don't do that. Mm. Only with like our specialized units, like the gang unit and stuff like that, we have two-man cars. Other cities don't. And it depends on what they have, right? Newport Beach, they might have a bike detail because they patrol the bikes, or a motorcycle detail out there in the sand, you know, off-road stuff. We don't, you have Anaheim, they have a helicopter, right? I mean, all these different things, and they have more resources than we do, you know, because they're a bigger agency.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Hmm. They have Disney there and a lot of stuff. Yeah.
A lot of stuff with Disneyland. I'll tell you, that's yeah, there's, it's.
I think this will be my last question, right? For you, why Garden Grove?
Garden Grove, you know, I'll tell you, because I started there and the way they've treated me, it's I've been loyal to that place because of the way they treated me. It's a great organization. I recommend it to anybody there. It's a great department. I've learned so much, and they're one of the agencies I can honestly tell you that we do police work. If you call us, we're going to respond. We're not going to say, hey, we'll come back and we never show up. And our guys are like proactive to go arrest people, that the crooks, not the innocent people, but the crooks.
I mean, because growing up myself in Santa Ana, I always used to hear, oh, well, you should probably move to Garden Grove. It's better over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, like, not to, you know, toot my own horn here for our city, but we live, or Garden Grove is, you know, our department is between Anaheim and Santa Ana.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, we don't have the crime rate that, or the gang issues that those other cities. Now, they're doing a great job. No taking away from that, but we really are proactive.
Like, you guys ride on a tight ship.
We try to, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're doing a good job. That's a good sign.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with Santa. Santa's a great department, and Anaheim as well, but it's just we do things a little different, and it's worked for us.
It's okay, man. You can toot your own.
No. I don't want to. Yeah, I did toot my own horn. I'm not lying. It's the truth. But don't want to be disrespectful to them as well.
Not at all. Well, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
It was an honor having you, and great conversation. We appreciate you very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it for having me.
Thank you. And thank you guys for listening to the No Quitters Podcast. Anytime you guys want to listen to us, you guys can go to No Quitters Podcast on all handles.
Yes.
And No Quitters on Instagram. Thank you guys for joining.
Instagram, YouTube, and all platforms. No Quitters. Thanks again.